The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
You're all very subdued before a Leinster final. Good evening, Newbridge! Listen, we have a brilliant show lined up for you. We've got good news. We're going to take a look back at the 2000 Leinster final replay with Glenn Ryan, Willie McCreary and Johnny McGee. We all know it turned around very well for Kildare. And the bad news is we're going to have a look ahead to Sunday's match, right? So I have to say, Conan, I was a little bit nervous coming in here because myself and Kildare fans haven't always seen eye to eye. If I'm being honest, they hate me, right? It might have something to do with me saying everyone in a tie is on ease. I'm not too sure. It might have something to do with me calling Andrew McLaughlin a knobhead. I'm not too sure. It might have something to do with us beating you in the 2003 Leinster final. What a great day that was. Or it could be just me just being a general mouthpiece from Laois. I'm not sure. But just to get us off on the right footing, I've brought a peace offering for everybody from Kildare and anyone from Dublin, I suppose, as well. Here's a video of Nuxer Buckley knocking the shit out of me in Croke Park.
Michael Buggy pings into Niall Buckley on the charge again. The Kildare midfielder going through off his right boot. A lovely curling shot that's gone over, and that's a smashing point by Niall Buckley.
Get a free
Colin
there.
Parkinson tried what to tackle him.
I don't know. I don't know. Glenn Ryan dying to see that video again. For the Don't strain your neck there, Glenn. I actually don't know why I get slagged about that video. I showed a lot of heart to get back up on my feet and try and track him and try and get
back. That was a half-hearted track back. You weren't trying to get back at all.
All right, Colin, tell everyone what you're doing here.
I think Mikey already told you, just best question of the night gets free tickets to Sunday's game, courtesy of AIB. So at the end of the second segment, I'll be running around with a mic. Don't be shy. Put your hand up and we get a question.
Yeah, get some questions in. Because like Mikey said, best question of the night gets two free tickets to Sunday's Leinster final. Right, let's get going with the show. Enough of me and Conan. First panel of the night is Glenn Ryan, Willie McCreary and Johnny McGee. Give it up for them.
I thought the couch was for you, no? Huh? I thought the couch was for you.
You two wouldn't fit in it.
I was actually wondering, like, you were both playing that day, Glenn, that time Nuxer hit me. My head was so scrambled running around after Eddie McCormack, I just wasn't thinking straight. I think that's what happened that day. But yeah, we want to have you here, lads, because we want to talk about that match in 2000. And, like, the analysis of this match is it was a game of two halves. Like, two completely different games. Like, first off, what the hell happened, Glenn, in the first half?
I don't know, but I suppose it was a replay, wasn't it?
It was a replay, yeah. 14-all in the draw match.
I was actually talking to Nuxer last night. He said he's asking for you. Wondering when you're coming over. So whenever you're coming over, he'll be coming home. So. it was a funny one, all right. I think we were 6 or 7 down at half time, when realistically we should have been about 10 or 13. It's like Dublin just ran rings around us. We were nowhere near the pitch of the game.
Why was that?
I couldn't tell you. I haven't thought about it a whole lot, to be honest. But they played real good football. But as the game seemed to go on, particularly in the first half, I remember Brian Steins going for a goal from about 21 yards out that hopped about 3 times before it landed into Christy Byrne's hands. And it was as if they let the way they were playing affect how they were going to go further, because they started doing all the wrong things with maybe a couple of minutes ago in that first half. I think we were 9 or 10 down, and all of a sudden, just when half time came, I think we were 6, and we had a real opportunity then. But we were well outplayed. There's no other excuse for it other than that. But when we went in at half time, I think we certainly realised with only 6 points down that we'd have a chance. You know.
Yeah. Did Mikko run the shite out of you during the week, Willie, or something like that, between the drawn match and the replay?
I never minded the running. It was the football that always bothered me. No, in fairness, no, Mickon, he didn't that week, I think, did he? I don't think so.
No, I think.
I know lots of people who had a few pints before the game, and they, at half time they're bursting to go to the Jacks, and there was a queue for the Jacks, and they were still in the toilet, and the match, the second half started, and all there was a big cheer. They go, what the fuck is that, do you know? And they were still in the Jacks, and then they came out, another on the way out to the pitch, another cheer, and next minute look up at the scoreboard, it was level. So they missed all the action, you know, so it just happened so quickly. I mean, we got a goal from the throw-in and I think from the next kick-out, you know, so it just changed.
Incredible change.
What did Brian Stein say to you coming out?
it's something like same old, you know.
This is it, yeah.
Yeah, the usual.
Half-time or something.
Yeah. When was this, Willie, in the first half?
Yeah, the first half going in, he said something kind of derogatory. And then when we got the second goal, I ran out to him and hit him his shoulder, kind of bounced off and says, game on now, isn't it, bud? You know, so. Yeah, you'd have those kind of laughs as well, you know, with lads.
It wouldn't be like the Dubs to be cocky when they're destroying Kildare in the first half, Johnny.
No, definitely not. that'd be typical Brian, though. He had that kind of arrogance about him. So I'm not surprised that that's what he said to Willie at the end of the first half. So, it was... I suppose 6 points up, as Glenn alluded to there, like we should have been at least 10, 13 out of sight, really. Started the second half, conceded a soft goal from the throw-in. But I think we were still in the dressing room, being honest. I think lads felt that the game was over. And within space of 2 minutes, it was game on. And for me... I was just saying to you earlier on, like our free takers that day from the left was Jim Gavin, and from the right was Brian Stein. So we didn't have a designated free taker. And look, the way teams are winning are these days, need a free taker needs to convert in 80% of the scoring opportunities.
Yeah.
Whereas we weren't, you know. So
what was Tom Carr saying to you at halftime? Like, you're obviously in the dressing room saying just keep it going, whereas I presume Kildare were in the dressing room being hopped off. You know, so you're coming out in completely different.
Yeah, I suppose it was more to be composed and take the game to them again and win the second half. But none of us envisaged, you know, the two goals. And then, like, as soon as you can take a sucker punch, but a sucker punch in the space of 2 minutes, and then it's level field. Like, all the momentum's shifted, you know, the belief within the lads came, and like they had very good footballers that punished us, and they just grew into the game where. I felt like I was 22 at the time, myself and Patter, and just 22, we were young enough, but I felt the leaders within that team probably shrunk, whereas the leaders within Kildare grew, and, you know, the fight was on, you know.
Dermot Early, sorry, go on.
In the dressing room for ages, though. There's some talk around that time or after, but there's plenty of talk, you know. that was big row in the dressing room or something. You seem to be in it for ages. And I think we were well out in the out in the field a long time. And one of the reasons I remember is that we were out there that long, but the six backs got together at one stage while we were waiting, and we kind of said, we can't concede any more than 3 points here for the second half.
Actually, Dermot Early said, you said, if we concede 1 point in the second half, we'll win the game. I think you're actually a prophet and a captain as well.
Oh, yeah, it's great, lad. We still had to get about 10 the other end, so that was the easy thing to say. But I think it may have only been a pint or two, but it seemed to be in the dressing room for ages, and there was a lot of talk the week after the game that was all sorts of rows and different things happening in the dressing room.
There was no row, but it was the fact that we didn't punish, and I think it was we reinforced going back out that we cannot be so wasteful again in the second half, you know, and that's why I think it was just a kind of... reinforce everything that we had done well in the first half, but be a little bit more clinical, you know. Yeah. There's definitely no row. It's not that I'm aware of, unless it was.
They'd be doing well to row when the 6 points off at halftime, wouldn't they? But anyways, that's what you were saying in the dressing room. We would have been watching at home, and we would have been watching Pat Spillane come out with this. If we have the video there, lads.
That's better than what Pat normally comes out with.
To Cullum, if that's the best exhibition of championship football I've seen this year, if it's the best Cullum I've seen, it's certainly not the best I've seen. It's a good performance by Dublin, but they're against a woeful and inept opposition. An inept opposition where a forward line not one of them could manage to score from play. But of course, what's new with Kildare forwards? A team who continue to shot past the ball, who take 8 passes to get to a 50-yard line, a team who over-carry the ball. Christ, they're so easy to defend against. And like I said, they have 2 attacking options. The 2 corner forwards, very lively, but there's no point in playing the ball into 2 corners to 2 lively little corner forwards, because then they have to work it all the way back in again. So, very good performance by them.
The thing about it is, Colin O'Rourke, why is this the case with Kildare forwards? I mean, the Sheepdown and Connemara know this about them. Passing tourists in Kildare can shout in the windows of people, "You can't score." They know this. Why don't they do something about it?
Well, I suppose you have to cut your cloth to suit. And like Eddie McCormack, who was one of the heroes against Offaly and scored 5 points in one of those games, has been substituted again for the second game in a row. And he was one of their scoring forwards. So what does that leave you with? You know, so like Kildare obviously don't have the type of players that would fit into those positions, that are able to get the ball, go by their men and score. Or that I'm sure Mick O'Dwyer would have them. Carl O'Dwyer is on now. Maybe he'll get a few points.
You're left with two square pegs and round holes, and Dermot Edley and Ronan Sweeney. They're 2 centre fielders. Carl O'Dwyer has come on. Brian Murphy will come on. If Carl O'Dwyer was in Kerry, he wouldn't be making the Kerry Senior Championship side. If Brian Murphy was in Cork, he wouldn't be making the Cork Junior footballing side.
Just remind me to keep a mental note about asking Eddie McCormack about getting taken off before half-time there, because he's on the next slot. But lads, what kind of a laugh did you get out of that? Because I presume you were told about it after the game, and you know when
we actually watched that at half-time. You know, it was a great incentive for us. You know what I mean?
Mico had this set up.
Oh yeah, we had a cup of tea and biscuits. You know what I mean? So it was grand. It was a great motivational thing for us, you know.
Isn't it gas the way it turned out? The 2 fellas that he actually picked out, you know, Carroll Dwyer had a big hand in the first goal, and Murphy in a huge hand in the second goal.
Yeah.
That it's almost like it was like fate or whatever going to happen. I don't know, but Spillane was left with some egg on his face.
Not for the first time, I suppose. But it's yeah. Sure, but there was uproar. Like a lot of
It's job security for
job security. Yeah, yeah. But there was a lot of people who were disgusted with the fact that he said it at all, you know. And it was great that we proved, but a lot of people were very, very annoyed that he kind of, you know, was so insulting to the 2 fellas who were there. They would have put on a lot of work to get to that level. And remember when Brian Murphy came first?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, he's after being down in Cork, I think he had 2 cruciate operations, yeah. And he's a big man at the best of time. When he come up here, he could hardly run around the pitch in Hawkfield, but he stuck at it and stuck at it. And if there was a fella that you would have been, you couldn't have been happier the fact that he got that goal in 98. And he was very precious. We mind him. He was very precious to us because he put in more work than anybody. And it was a nice thing to be saying about a fella who put in, and Carol as well, who put in a huge amount of work.
Yeah, but there was that perception of Kildare around that time that you didn't have the, you know, maybe the forward line or the top forward line. It's a bit like what's said about Mayo now, even whether that's even fair on them or not.
Well, I suppose you look at the scores, maybe it's true. It's hard to argue with it, but you know, the lad said maybe our style of play didn't suit. You know, say you talk about Eddie there, he was, you know, as good a forward in the country, and I would say possibly did it. A very similar role to the likes of Brian Doher, you know.
I marked him. I know all about what he used to do. Yeah.
And so we had good forwards, but definitely Carroll made a big difference to us, and that came after 98 as well. And he had proven himself that he was good enough to be a county footballer. He got an All Star in 98, so it was a cheap shot in many ways from Pat Reilly.
Yeah,
but it was great then that the lads went out and proved him wrong.
So Willie, these personal attacks were going on way back when. It's not just Pat Spillane now. Do you actually think that wouldn't have got the same? If that was said now, it would get much bigger headlines. Do you think players are a little bit oversensitive now to a bit of criticism that goes on the Sunday game?
Well, I suppose we give it to the soccer players every week, but they're paid for it. Like the GA lads aren't paid for it. So, you know, you're not entitled to say that about. I think he was probably hitting a Carl because he was Mikko's son and another Kerry man. You know, it was a bit personal that way. But I mean, It's job dependency. It's job, you know, they have to be saying something like that. Sure, Brawley's the same. But I think Spillane, you know, when he'd meet you out, sure he'd half fucking lick your arse. You know what I mean? But Colm O'Rourke, I would agree with, you know, a lot he says, but he didn't bring anything personal there. But
he's the voice of reason, I suppose,
a good old pundit, yeah. You know, in fairness, you know, but sure, the other lad's half mad anyway.
And would you have taken things to heart that was said about you when you were playing, or I wouldn't think you would care less?
Me?
Yeah.
No, sure, Jesus, the amount of people that, you know, when I used to get the ball. Actually, I remember one day playing against you. And we were playing Leash. Was it the time the second year we beat them, or I can't think what it was, 98 or something. Yeah, it was 98, because we give you a fucking hammering. But I was going through, straight through the middle, and you were kind of half running after me. And Eddie was over on the far side, and I put up my hand, and he was about 40 yards away, and I says, I'll put up your hand, there's no fucking way he'll give it to me. And straight into the chest, it landed. And I got it at about the 14-yard line. By the time I was running that hard, I could see the Coley coming out, and he closed his eyes and put up his feet. I went to kick it, hit it with my knee, and dribbled wide. And you came over to me, something missed, Willie. You're gone. Right? 10 minutes later, who gets the curly finger? I go over and see you, Willie.
If I remember that, you wouldn't have been hit. You wouldn't be here tonight.
No,
it is very like something I would do. There's no doubt. And I did get the curly finger. Yeah. That's a classic. Now, the one about hitting it off your knee, obviously, I'm talking about. Not the curly finger. Johnny, you were in transition then, weren't you? Because it's a weird time to think back at this time when Dublin hadn't won a Leinster in 5 years. It had been shared around between Kildare, Meath, who were All-Ireland contenders, then Laois Westmeath won it, Offaly won it, maybe not All-Ireland contenders, but were winning Leinsters. Ye hadn't won one, and you didn't win one then until 2002. Like, yourself, Padder Andrews, Coman Goggins, Shane Ryan, all started coming into the team, and you had a lot of the 95 team as well, so it was a strange time for Dublin football.
Yeah, there was a lot of mixture there of youth and experience, you know. That day, I think, in 2000, Paul Curran, Desi, Brian Steins, Jim Gavin, you know, I suppose it was, that team had been relatively successful, won the All-Ireland, probably should have won at least another one, definitely. So it was like as if there was a big shift in relation to personnel coming in and, you know, given the jersey. At that time, it was knockout, so there was no kind of easy into it, do you know what I mean? It was like straight out knockout, so you always had to be prepared, and you didn't get the way it is now where lads can ease into it, and the pressure isn't as severe, whereas then the expectation of Dublin teams is always that you're expected to win, well, be in the reckoning come August time, September time, you know, so to go from being relatively unsuccessful underage coming through, and then the burden of then of the 70s teams was really the what you would always feel going out playing with Dublin, you know. So it was trying to compare the youth and experience of us along with the lads who have been relatively successful. And it was a difficult time, but I still felt we still had a good team. Like, you know, on paper it was a good team.
Yeah.
And when we did play well, we played very well. It was just when teams got to run us, we just didn't seem to have that kind of leaders or within the group that just didn't close up shop, do you know what I mean? So we played some very good football, but it was just when the shit hit the fan, we didn't have those real dogger characters that you wanted to dig in, you know?
Yeah, wasn't that the perception, lads? Like, I remember thinking that myself around that time, that Dublin, if you get at them, you can get inside your heads. You're at nothing now, really. But like back then, it was a different Dublin team, as in you didn't fear, like teams like Laois, Kildare, Meath just didn't have any fear going to Croke Park. You'd nearly go there thinking, let's silence the crowd rather than let's worry about the crowd, Willie.
Yeah, well, like I mean, we had huge support then. I mean, in 98 and 2000, we had huge support. I'd say we matched, you know, Dublin, you know, when we went up against Dublin, definitely. And same again, you know, like there is a huge support in Kildare and just itching for a bit of success, do you know what I mean? And back then we had huge support, unbelievable support, and everywhere, all around the country, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you'd match them 50-50, would you?
I think, definitely. If you look back at the 2000 Leinster final, if you look back at it, you'd see 50-50, definitely, yeah.
Right.
Going back to the league final in 91, it was 60,000 plus at that league final. And the reason being was so many Kildare people, and Leinster finals then in 92 and 93, it was the same. Like, Croke Park was a sellout for those games, you know. So, and it wasn't as sexy then to be following Dublin as what it is now. You know, there's no doubt the Dublin support has grown hugely in the last number of years, but back then it wasn't as great. And during that period as well, Dublin went through, I suppose, a bit of a lull.
Yeah,
it went a number of years, and we had great struggles to get over them, and eventually did. We beat them in 98 after a replay, and at that stage, the kind of the end of the Heeries and the Bars and the Kearns, their best days were over, and we were kind of confident that we were fellas who were around for a while, and Dublin now had to go into that period of transition, as you say, and we were able to get the better of them for a couple of years. But you know, I suppose it happens in those cycles.
Yeah, talk to.
At the time, the teams were good, like yourselves. Made like we were always beating each other. There was no kind of out and out one, and like I felt that we knew that when we played yourselves or me, that there was always going to be a tough battle ahead. It was never any foregone conclusion, you know. I felt the teams back then were on a more level playing field, just as equal, many as good players as each other, you know. And it was just on the day, you know, that whoever came out and played a better football, obviously we'll win. But I just felt those teams were on a more level field, I felt, and they were just as good as each other. Like there was 8 or 10 teams at that stage could win the All-Ireland, you know.
Yeah, and even Leinster, like without reminiscing and you know going on about it, the Leinster Championship.
That's what you came here today for, isn't
but the Leinster Championship was brilliant back then. Though, like I said, there's 5 different winners between 97 and 04. Like it's like so long ago now when we see the Leinster Championship, and it's a waste of time. Usually, you know, fingers crossed. Even me being a Leishman, that Kildare can start challenging Dublin, so at least we'll have a final, you know. But back then, it was a proper championship.
It was, yeah, and there were a lot of good teams of a similar ability, and some were stronger than the other, but any one day, one could catch the other one out. Dublin have moved ahead of everybody else in Leinster, there's no doubt. I think there's, up to this year, there's certainly been a dropping off of the standards in Leinster, you know. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But no different to the hurling with Kilkenny. Dublin are going through their golden period, and when it does finish, when the Flynns and you know, the McMahons and all these great players, the Brogans, when they come to their end, which we'd like to think might start on Sunday with the way the team is going, that you know they're not going to come back with those brilliant players or fellas to replace them overnight.
Yeah.
It'll take a bit of time, and just because you score 5 or 6 points against Westmeath in a 30 point victory doesn't mean that you're the next Paul Flynn or Dear McConnelly. So there hopefully is, maybe, I wouldn't necessarily say a changing of the guard, but certainly a changing
there's
of
hope.
The hope.
There's hope, yeah.
Hope,
there's
yeah.
more hope than there was. Willie, talk to me about Mick O'Dwyer and the influence he had over Kildare. And like you loved running, you're on record for saying that. So I'd say he had favourites when he was in Leash, so I presume he was the same in Kildare, and you were probably top of that list, yourself and Anthony Rainbow, I would imagine, Glenn Ryan for obvious reasons. Who else would have been on that list of?
Well, Eddie wasn't anyway. Mikko used to, at the end of training, used to say, "No, come on, the fatties, you know who you are. And if you started to walk into the dressing room, where are you going? And if you started to walk over, you go on in, you go on in." So you could never figure him out.
Yeah.
But he had his favourites. But like, I mean, you would have won nothing only for Mikko either.
No, that's true.
We would have, well, you know what I mean? He came up to
Kildare. He gives you that spark and that confidence,
yeah,
doesn't he? That you
can't. Well, he gets all the clubs rolling behind him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you don't have a big profile manager, the clubs don't row in behind the manager, and then sure you're at nothing. You know what I mean? And he had the clubs rolling in behind us. And, I mean, he got the same time Michael Osborne set up the Kildare Supporters Club, which is a great thing. You know, it helped pay for all the training and everything and all the steak dinners that we never got.
You weren't on the panel at the time, that's why you were.
Oh, you got a steak dinners early?
Yeah.
Yeah, that you won nothing with.
You were in Japan.
So we came in the healthy dinners then, we were grand.
Well, if talk of the town, steak and chips is healthy, it certainly does no harm.
Yeah.
When Mikko came first, we used to dine in the Cadeen. And you cut down after training, maybe about 9:30, 10:00. And you'd go in and you'd have wouldn't be a set menu, you could a choice, you'd have a choice of starter. And you get your big steak and onions, and then you had desserts, and sure, it could be 11:30, 12:00 by the time you rolled out. And but at the time, all the talk about Mikko was that he was getting flown up, that he's getting a helicopter up to from Waterville up, and Mikko heard that was a big crew of journalists waiting for him at the Cadeen one day before training. So he used to drive up come up from Waterville and Gwindicadine for a cup of tea maybe before he came training. So Mikko heard that there was a big crew, and there was a bit of talk at the time of all this helicopter that he was getting, and it was the Sheik's helicopter, and up and down every day and the whole lot. So Mikko got he had a 1977 orange Opel Corsa that he had back in the house, and he managed to get it fired up, and he drove the whole way up from Waterville into the Cadine, rolled up beside the journalists, and they were all waiting for him outside the door of the Cadine. "Hello, lads, how are you?" Strolled in past him and had his cup of tea, back into the Opel Corsa training, and drove back down to Kerry in his orange Opel Corsa at 77.
Yeah.
And they never questioned him anymore about the helicopter after that.
He was mischievous, though. I remember one time with Leash, like, you'd always have a fry the morning of a match in Croke Park without fail. And it was around the year 2002-03, and the sports science was coming into it. So we were on to Mikko, we need a nutritionist, just because we heard every other team had them. So we're saying, so he was throwing his eyes up to heaven at the thoughts of this anyway. So this girl comes in and she's telling us what to eat, and sure, Mikko's beside her, like, with his head down laughing at the good of it, you know. And we're to have this fruit and a mixed bowl and all, you know, no carbs, let's have some cereals, bread, toast, whatever, fruit. Then we get up to the Red Cow on the Sunday of a Leinster final and the full fry is on again. Like, not even entertaining, you know, but like, he was slow to change. He had his ways and that was it.
Yeah, but like, he when we trained in Hawkfield there, training be 7:30, he'd be the first one there at 7:10, wouldn't he? After driving up from Waterville,
yeah,
he'd finish training, and training would be an hour. None of this talk and crap that they have now. He'd be on the pitch 7:30, he'd finish at 8:30. You might have a 5-minute talk and that'd be it. But you might do it 5 times a week now, but you wouldn't, not like the training sessions now, you talk about how you train and all this kind of stuff. You know, that'd do my head in. But like, he finished with you and he drove home. And he did that four or five nights a week. Do you know? But he told me one time, you know, he says, "When you get the ball, give it to Carl. You don't try and shoot, don't give it to Carl." Or the other thing, if you get close enough, don't shoot till you see the white of the goalie's eyes. And I says, Mikko, sure, I'll have to be fierce close then. "Now you have it," he says, "now you have it."
But it's not just what he does for Kildare, and I remember this when he was with Leash. It's the confidence he would give you knowing Mikko is your manager, but also the fear the other team has, saying, shit, Mikko's over them. Even though, like, Mikko might not have huge tactics on it, but like, the fear factor, Johnny, is, shit, we're playing a team Mikko Dwyer is managing. And I sense that from other teams, and the fact that they would be worried would even give you even more confidence, used to give us even more confidence.
Yeah, no, I suppose... when Mikko was looking from my point of view, or the point of view when Mikko was in charge of Leash or Kildare, it was, you always knew that he's that special ingredient, and you just wondered what it was and what's the influence he had over a bunch of 30 fellas in their 20s, and what's he doing, you know. And I always wondered, like, what is it, what's it like? And then I suppose when being involved with Wicklow over the last few years, you would hear some of the lads that played underneath him. He just, it was his touch, the arm around the shoulder. He gave you that self-belief, you know, and you can hear the lads speak fondly of him. And he said, like, they would run through a brick wall for him. And it was just that kind of little sprinkle of magic that he had. But it wasn't just with the group, it was with each individual player. And he always went out his way. And his big thing was the players. They were the most important people. Always, and didn't care about anybody else but the players. And that was the one thing that I got from the Wicklow lads, is that they didn't want for anything, didn't need. All you had to do was say to Mikko, "Can we have this?" "Yeah, no problem." Everyone was put on. And then, it's funny you say there about the fry, there was a story with James Stafford, they're going to Croke Park, and Staff wanted a few more sausages. And he said, no more. "Will you get that man fucking sausages? He wants more sausages, he's playing Croke Park." But he's that special that the lads spoke very, very fondly of him, you know, that it was a pleasure to play for him, you know, so.
Yeah. The famous one was the laps, obviously. So you could set your clock by his training. So, like, until maybe halfway through the league, you'd be doing the laps or the start of the league. And the minute the long evenings start coming in, then matches. And you don't get better at Gaelic football without practicing Gaelic football. Like, and it wasn't rocket science, but it completely worked, because now... Sometimes it used to be A's versus B's, where the B's had no chance and they get this demoralised, but he'd be building the A team up, you know. But, like, I mean, it worked for him. And, like, it did work for the teams as well.
Oh yes, like.
But do you think do you think not enough teams play football in training? You'd be surprised how many drills there are and how many different things there is without actually practicing what you're going to be playing.
You sometimes wonder, and particularly at club level, where managers put on these drills just to look good and just to keep the team happy. Like Mikko didn't have to worry about trying to keep players happy, because once you're with Mikko, you know, sure, he was an icon, he was a god. Yeah. You know, he had that advantage over everybody else. But like the absolutely, during the winter, the training was, as you know, well, I don't know whether you know or not, but they did train hard.
I did
during the inter and did those laps and did those hard running and the variation you talk now about drills and all this. The only variation Mikko brought to training is, we'll go this direction or we'll go that direction for the next 14 laps or 15 laps. And as you said, from April on, it was like you couldn't wait to get in there, because it was an hour and a half of football.
Yeah, but like the other thing too is like, you know, we have a nice perception of Mikko too. Mikko was ruthless, like literally ruthless. Like, I mean, he went through probably 60, 70 players in Kildare, and if he couldn't do the laps, no matter how, you could be the best striker of a ball in Europe, you could bring in anyone, but if he couldn't run, out the gate.
But he'd make his mind up on a player very early, and if he doesn't fancy it, you can have 9 good games out of 10, and the one bad one, you're gone.
Yeah.
You've no way back if he doesn't
fancy. No way back. And like Christy Byrne did all the running with us, a goalkeeper, like Brian Murphy, like full forward. Do you know what I mean? He just ran the guts out of a lot of people too. You know, but he just was a ruthless man. I remember he used to take, Glenn was his little pretty boy. He used
to I don't know about pretty boy, well, but it might have been his pet.
He used to take him golfing every Saturday, right? And of course, his theory was, if I have Glenn right, Glenn will have the boys right. So Glenn would come back, ah, Mikko's sound, ah, Mikko's lovely. Ah, Mikko. Of course, he was paying for Mikko, Glenn's golf, right? But then Glenn got injured. And I said, Glenn, any golf recently? What do you mean? Has Mikko brought you golfing? No. Ah, so you're no good to him anymore. That was Mikko.
He would take it as a personal, you know, slight on his management if you got injured. He hated you if you got injured for some reason. He just took it.
Do you remember the time he went up to the there was only, he was trying to play one of the games in the long evenings, and he had Newbridge, you know, and it was a beautiful evening, and he started picking teams, and there was only like 12 aside. Where's everyone? And there was lads queuing up and up injured. What the fuck are they doing up there? They're all injured, Mikko. I think Johnny Crofton told him. Mikko went storming off. You either get out in that fucking pitch or fuck off home. There's no one up here. So half of them went home, a few of them came out, and that was it. Like,
no physio for another
no physio for, you know, just.
There'd be no physio trail. Hated you if you were injured. Come here, listen, that's brilliant stuff, lads. I could talk about Mikko all day, but we've run out of time. Give it up for Glenn Ryan, Willie McCreary, and Johnny McGee. We're back on the AIB Facebook Live page. So hello to all our viewers on AIB's Facebook Live page. Right, it's time for our second panel. Please give it up for Pillar Caffrey, Eamon Fennell, and Eddie McCormack.
Come on, Eddie.
How are you?
Jesus, Eddie, this 98 game is a nightmare for me. You gave me the runaround. Nooks or knock me into the middle of next week, and I'm outed to William McCreary and got taken off 10 minutes later.
You didn't have happy days against Kildare them times, but you did in 2003.
Yeah, well, I have to ask you about that 2000 game. Mikko gave you the curly finger, did he?
Yeah, I got the curly finger. I wasn't very happy, to be honest with you, but I was hiding a bit of an injury, and I didn't want them to know, of course. I was taking a few painkillers here and there, you know, but I got found out eventually, and I missed the All-Ireland semi-final over then.
Right.
Against Galway, you know.
Okay.
So I had a groin injury, so I couldn't play in that.
Right, okay. So right, lads, we want to talk about the game on Sunday. I'll start with you, Pillar. How worried are you about Kildare?
Well, the first thing you'd have to say is, you know, looking at the start of the championship this year, you would have said Kildare are best placed in Leinster to put it up to Dublin. I'd say from Kildare's point of view, you know, coming into the Laois game, a lot of people were saying it was 50-50, but Kildare had a very good National League behind them, and they came into that game and obviously blew Laois out of the water. So that was a huge boost to them. Then they roll on into Meath, and like Meath this year, I would have feeling that the two McEntees, they got their dream team. Everything was going to change in Meath, that they were going to come back and really force Leinster. But sure, Kildare were like a an adult team, and Mead were like an under 21 team that day. They were just physically blown out of the water. So they've had two massive games under their belt coming into it. So they're in a good place. The only thing I would be disappointed would be, I was at the league final against Galway, and I thought they were awful that day, Kildare. And I thought they were way too negative. I thought it was like they were scared to take on Galway and really go at them. So, you know, it is a big step up now coming up against Dublin. I know Kildare will bring a big crowd, but they'll be close to 60,000 in Croke Park, and they are playing a team that doesn't have bad days. Like this Dublin team, the remarkable thing about them, besides being so talented, is they have very few off days collectively. You know, when you're going, you're an underdog and you're going in, you're saying, well, if they have a bad day, we're going to be able to shout. Like, you can't remember when Dublin last had a bad day. And that's the only reason I would fear. But I think, you know, athletically, mobility-wise, physique-wise, I think Kildare are well matched to Dublin. The big thing is, look, when Dublin wheel in, you know, Owen O'Gara, Bernard Brogan, and Kevin McMenamin for the last 15 minutes, and you're in the backs after playing your heart out, and you look at these three fellas coming in on top of you, like, that's what Dublin have at the moment that most counties can't match.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Eamon, what about you when you look at the Leinster Championship and Dublin have won the last seven, they've won, God knows, 12 of the last 13, and you're going in, there's only going to be, there's 60,000 going to be at the game, despite it being Dublin versus Kildare, which, like, you know, we're not near a sellout. Is the Leinster Championship, like, you know, looking on as a supporter, does it mean as much to Dublin anymore, or is it just a pathway to the big one?
Looking at it as a supporter, I don't think it means as much. I remember when we were winning Leinster's under Pillar, we went out Sunday, Monday, Tuesday after winning a Leinster final. Like, you know, the lads would be looking to go out for a pint after the game. So if I'm looking at it like that as a fan, I don't think it means as much. But when I talk to the players, it definitely means more than what you'd perceive. It's history they're making. Like, this team could go on to achieve absolute greatness. They have already. But it could go down to be the best team in the history of GA. That's how good these guys are. That's how young they are. And, like, Jim has that drilled into them. There's no better manager to get these lads levelled. I think you've seen it by the stance after the game when he came out, be it for right or wrong, supporting Dermot. But it was a unified approach, and what it did, it just galvanised the guys together. And what, after the game, they hit their biggest score in a championship game under Jim, their biggest winning margin. So, like, the lads are up for this. Make no bones about it.
Well, now that you mentioned that Jim Gavin thing, because it's so kind of old now, but he's back in the papers again today talking about Dear McConnelly's good name and all this kind of, you know, nonsense. He said Jim McGuinness was wrong by saying that Jim McGuinness criticised him and said his gamesmanship. What do you think it is, Eddie? Because it really is a strange one.
Yeah, I was reading that today, actually, and fair play to him for defending his player, you know.
But what's he defending him from?
He's defending him from, basically, his good name, is what he says. And we've seen that down through all the years with soccer managers as well.
Yeah. But lads aren't making up what he did. It's there. It was there, you know.
Yeah, but I think what he's getting at is the slant Pat Spillane put on it. He's attacking his good nature, basically. Now, he's not attacking him as a footballer. And we know Pat's done that before. Plenty of players, you know, so... He just wanted to back him up.
Yeah. You know? What do you think, Pillar, as an ex-manager? You've got your manager's hat on. An ex-Dublin manager. Like, I mean, what part of his good name was kind of affected here? He pushed a linesman, and people said he's after pushing a linesman. He could be in trouble. I just can't get my head around what part of Dermot's good name was, you know, defamed.
Look, I think, to be fair to everybody involved, if you're on the Sunday game panel, you're asked to comment on these matters. Like, to me, it was black and white. Dermot was going to face a suspension. Like, you know, Brian Cody got involved last week. Only because it's Brian Cody, I don't think they're taking him on. But, like, if what Dermot did was pushed under the carpet, what would be happening in every club game up and down the
country?
Well,
that's the point as well.
So I don't think, look, you know, Dermot was big enough to say, yeah, it was stupid. It was against Carlow in the first round. This is the last minute of an All-Ireland final and you're down a point. I absolutely, totally understand them going ballistic. I just didn't understand them doing this when they were going to win this game by 8, 10, 12 points, no matter what happened. Jim coming up and backing his player, I've no doubt that this was a decision made by the Dublin camp. This wasn't an on-the-spot decision made, because I noticed Paul Mannion got player of the match, and the normal procedure in Croke Park is player of the match is brought over for an interview live.
Yeah, no, I know the procedure.
Somebody obviously told you, Woolly. Of course, you're on the sideline now. You've seen it often enough. But Paul Mannion was ushered aside, obviously told he was doing no interview. So this was, you know, a decision by management that they were going to come out back in Dermot hard and galvanise the squad. Because, look, this is what you have to do. Like, Dublin are trying to do something that hasn't been achieved in a long, long time. So I think they would have looked on it and said, yeah, look, this is a way of circling the wagons here. Let's go for it.
But my information on Jim Gavin is he's not the circling the wagons type of manager. He's very process orientated. He's not this, like, he's not a Mick O'Dwyer that'll get everybody going. But he's not that type of manager. So it's out of character for him if that's what his motivation is.
Absolutely, Woolly. He's a, and like when you talk to him outside of football, that's the way he is. He's very composed. He's very level headed. But you know what? They're trying to do something that hasn't been done before. I think as a management group, they probably decided, look, we need to try and do something different here. We can't just think, yeah, let's follow the normal process and game and whatever. Let's try and stand up for Dermo for whatever reason and circle the wagon. And I guarantee you, as Eamon said, if you're in that dressing room, you felt good about yourself Sunday night that there's a bit of shit now about this.
Yeah, maybe that added motivation. What's your take on Jim Gavin, Eamon? Because I'm looking in from the outside at your situation with him, and he was pretty ruthless with you, because I remember meeting you in the gym before and you were telling me, like, in your defence, like, you were, he obviously didn't fancy you when he came in, which is his right, and you were doing a detailed programme and letting him know, look, I'm following this, I'm ready to go back in, you're doing really well with Vincent's, but, like, he's maybe that's one of his qualities that keeps them all on their toes, that he's so ruthless.
Yeah. I suppose my thing with Jim was, I was the first person Jim dropped when he got the job. It was a phone call saying, thanks for your time with Dublin. That was it. So
phone call by him.
Phone call by him, yeah. And like, 2012 was probably one of my better years in regards. I started every game for Dublin, had a relatively, one of my best seasons, I thought anyway, and then to be hit with that. But I suppose I was a point personally where I didn't know where I wanted to go in my career. I was DJing, promoting, had my own company, doing radio. So it was a bit all over the place, and Jim doesn't like that. Like, Jim just, if I was in a bank working 9 to 5, he would have probably would have been a bit more happy. But I think I was just a bit scattered in my personal life, and I actually had a really bad club championship that year. I think that rectified Jim's decision for dropping me. I've no gripes with Jim. I obviously would have liked to play it on for a few more years, and I do think I could have, but like, it's his call, and like, it has, I'm not the only person that's ever happened to it. I won't be the last. But sure, like, yeah, I just have to get on with these decisions and then turn your focus to the club, which I did. And I think Pillar would have seen the effort I was trying to put into trying to get back. And I was lucky enough to win a club All-Ireland off the back of it. So, like, you kind of have to take it as you go as well.
And did you ever put the feelers out after the club All-Ireland about getting back in or anything like that? It's just a bit like maybe Mick O'Dwyer, when he doesn't fancy you, you're just kind of gone and that's it.
I tore my hamstring off the bone in the Club All-Ireland final, so that sent me back a bit. And J.O. actually contacted me after just to see where I was at. I had to send over physio reports and medical reports and all that kind of stuff. But at that stage, I was never going to catch up to where the lads were at, coming off the back of a club campaign, injured, and then you're back for, what, June, July, when the lads are at nearly peaking. So that was my one moment, I think, for me to get back in the Dublin jersey. And I just got injured, so I was a bit unlucky in that regard. But
yeah,
these things happen.
You look at Dublin and you wonder, Eddie, where their motivation comes from, because they're winning Leinster so easily. And it's like their motivation is their squad, and that the minute they have a bad game, they're off. Jim's ruthless, someone else is on, and suddenly you're not on that 15. And that's where it's not necessarily the Leinsters. It's not losing their place, maybe, that's driving them on all the time.
He's very focused in everything that he does. We were at a club lunch there in Clane about a month ago, and he was guest speaker. And after half an hour, I still hadn't a clue what he said.
Were you asleep?
I was like a politician. I had no idea.
Everyone was asleep.
I started drinking. That was it. I just couldn't understand him at all. but look, he's a very nice man. He's a bit, as Willie said, like, Mikko is a very nice man on the face of it as well, and so is Jim. But Jim is obviously very ruthless as well, because he's not afraid to make the big decisions, because he has such a good panel, he's such a strong panel, and he's obviously changing like for like all the time, and he's obviously very kind of, he keeps himself to himself most of the time, especially with the media.
Yeah.
He does his interview, and he heads off, and you still don't know the wiser.
Yeah, he tells you absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Just from a Kildare point of view, looking at the Dublin team now, there are a lot of changes on it. Like, I mean, people say this is a golden generation, but the 2011 team, there's not many of them left. So, like, it's like a new generation. Like, Flynn, the famous half-forward line, like Flynn, Connolly, they won't, like, it doesn't look like Flynn starting. Bernard Brogan won't start. So they're, like, the three main top forwards that always did it for Dublin. They're not there, or they probably won't be there on Sunday. So like, when you look at it like that, there's a lot of new lads. It's not that team with the fear factor of maybe 2 years ago. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it probably is, but as I said to you, they're matching like for like, Colm. They're just bringing on players. Like Paul Mannion took a year out. He's back playing brilliantly now again. You know what I mean? Paddy Andrews as well. Very underrated forward. Top class.
Yeah.
You know, can score from anywhere on the pitch.
Killer played him Kevin corner back now.
that was Tommy Carr.
Oh, shit.
Gilroy, yeah.
He played corner back in the championship.
Yeah.
I would love if it was you.
Kevin McMenamin is not hitting the heights this year that he did last year. You know, his form's a bit iffy, but he's still on the day, can produce probably a wonder goal, you know. So they're always replenishing. They've Conor Callaghan coming in as well. They have Costello. Of all these players, it's just like a conveyor belt of talent.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
You know,
the big difference now in terms of what Dublin are bringing through, and they are an exceptional bunch, but they are very much geared towards Croke Park. The pace that this team have, I've never seen it in any Dublin team. I'm talking about from 74 onwards. Never seen the pace, the natural pace that the likes of James McCarthy, Johnny Cooper, Jack McCaffrey have. Throw in Paul Mannion, these fellas, like, they're frightening, they're so quick. Like, all these players are the fastest players in their club teams, and you know, there's just an era now of massive pace, and then match that with the likes of Brian Fenton, and, like, that was the one area that everybody had a worry about. There's a big gap now in Dublin midfield. You know, Michael Darren McAuley has fallen off the wagon with his injury and all that. So Brian Fenton came from nowhere. Like, this guy never played minor for Dublin. He only came on as a sub in an All-Ireland semi-final at under-21 level. And then all of a sudden, a year later, he's a nominee for Player of the Year, having played a brilliant game for Dublin. And I think he's only been bet once in a Dublin jersey. Like, it's just incredible.
Yeah, the league final in 2 years.
But he's a phenomenal good player, very level-headed guy, and can really play football, you know, at a high level week in, week out. So it is unique that they're bringing in fellas. Like, you take Conor Callaghan, we haven't seen this guy yet. But this fella, and everybody will tell you that's seen him all the way along, he is an exceptional talent. Now, so he's going to develop over the next 2 or 3 years. And the one player that's really making Dublin tick at the moment is Kieran Kilkenny. So it'll be very interesting to see what Kildare have in store for him, because, like, he is just growing into this jersey in such a way. Even since Paul Flynn has missed a lot of games and Dermot's out of the scene now, he's probably the most important player to Dublin at the moment.
Yeah. You'd imagine Keith Cribbin is tailor-made for Kilkenny for the engine. Would he be at it?
Yeah, he would be, I suppose. Yeah, he would be. Or they might put maybe... the other half back, I'm just kind of give his name at the minute.
Go on, keep going.
Anyway, but Keith Cribbin, you would think
Tommy Byrne, is it?
Yeah, he'd be like that as well. He'd be fairly good engine in him as well, you know.
Yeah.
But Keith'd probably be dirtier.
Right.
You know, so you know. But Kieran Kilkenny's an exceptional player. You have, like, I mean, the work rate and the running that he does is just unbelievable. Like, he's the engine room there. He sets up everything, especially when teams are defensive against Dublin. He's the one that makes things tick, makes things happen, sets up scores, chips in with 3 or 4 points himself as well. In my mind, I think he's been player of the year so far for me.
Right. It's interesting. I saw some quotes from Keane O'Neill, and he says, will we be more defensive-minded? He says, of course we will. And I'd hate Kildare to do that, because we saw them in the league final against Galway, and they were deplorable. We saw them playing against Meath, and they were exceptional. And playing more attack-minded. They actually play a very similar system to Dublin. So you would hate, as a neutral, to see Kildare move away from that aim. Well, as a dub, like, you know. Yeah, but from analysing the game from, you know, a spectacle point of view, you'd imagine Kildare, if they start going defensive, they're just handing the initiative to Dublin.
I think to a certain degree they have to go defensive. Like, just initially to settle the nerves, even for the lads to know for 20, 25 minutes, Dublin arm racking up the scores, like, you know, it'll give them a bit of confidence going forward. I'm not saying 15 men behind the ball, like, you still need to attack. And that's where teams in Leinster especially have gone wrong with Dublin. They think 15 men behind the back, Dublin will score 8, we'll score 9. It's not the case, like, you know. So trying to get the balance right is really tough. And unless you're used to playing that system, I just don't think you can turn up on the day and go, okay, we're going to go defensive for the first half, and then the second half we're going to go all-out attack. It's just, from what I hear, Keane's a great trainer, an unbelievable trainer. The lads speak very highly, and anyone that's ever worked on him speak very highly. So between him and Ronan Sweeney is supposed to be great for tactics. That's what's coming out of the camp, if we say I'm wrong or not, but I think they'll have a better understanding of Dublin than what Westmead had last year, what Meath had the year before, like, you know. So it'd be interesting to see what way to go, but they can't go ultra defence, no.
No, no. They seem to, like I said, they have the same tactics as Dublin. They'll drop Bond Dial back off his man like Keane O'Sullivan does. They'll bring Slattery and Conway back, working back, you know, maybe to pick up his man and leave four forwards up there. And it's like, it's almost a mirror image. Like, a lot of teams see Keane O'Sullivan playing that sweeper role without having to bring back a forward and play it pillar, you know, just use your centre back and then just drop one or two back. That it's almost like they said, right, this works for Dublin, it clearly does, let's try the same thing.
Yeah, I suppose the difference is when you look at Dublin, how they're playing, like the last day Keane O'Sullivan actually went in full back and marked John Heslin, and Johnny Cooper played in front of him, so I'd never seen that happening before.
No.
So Johnny Cooper was a strike runner coming out from defence, and Johnny is brilliant at that. Now, there's rumour that Johnny could be injured for the weekend, so we'll see. But Dublin have so many players that are comfortable on the ball. Like, you know, Mick Fitzsimons, you look at Darren Daly, wholly underrated, but he was brilliant the last day. Slotted in at wing half back. John Small is probably back in contention for Sunday now as well. But these guys are all really, really comfortable on the ball. They can all carry the ball at pace. So there's so much mixing and matching that it doesn't matter really. The challenges that have been posed to this Dublin team over the last 3 years have been blanket defence or teams taking them on 15 on 15. They just see that as a challenge. It took them longer to break down Carlow because they were so negative. It took them less time to break down Westmeath because they went more or less only one sweeper. So, you know, I think Kildare's best chance would be, okay, try and stay in the game, but have a real cut at Dublin, you know. And look, the big thing is, what are they going to do with Cluckson and the kickouts? If they're playing very defensive and they let Clucko chip the ball to cornerbacks, I think they're in big trouble because Dublin are so good at carrying this ball out because they're doing it week in, week out. This is the way they've set up. And guys, they love that. Where if you force Dublin 15 on 15 and say, right, Clucko, let's make it a minefield. Every ball has to come out of the middle and every ball is going to be fought for. I think you're looking at a different conundrum then.
Yeah.
Just on that, I think with the Kildare and me game, if you look at it, Kildare won majority kickouts. Field was unbelievable.
Yeah,
like,
they,
you know,
destroyed me in midfield, yeah.
And they grew and grew with every kickout they won. Dublin are definitely going to go short. They're definitely going to isolate someone, like, you know, to go. And then I'd question the two midfielders. If they're getting starved of kickouts, how prominent are they going to be in the game? Because that's what they're relying on. They're relying on a big kickout coming out, and they're not getting it. Well, then how are they going to feature? So
yeah,
that's going to be, with the kickout, I agree with Pillar, is going to be a really interesting thing.
I think the stats on the Kildare kickouts is that they're putting most of them to midfield, and there's a lot of, you know, they're getting a lot of marks. But, like, I mean, Fenton and McCarthy will just probably break that straight back down on top of the Kildare defence, you know. So, kind of, the idea that you're going to outfetch Fenton, yeah, and McCarthy, it's like fanciful stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Tommy Mulick is a big fella. He's well able to mind his own in the middle of the field, you know. Kevin's big and strong in the air as well, but
Kevin's got more class.
He's probably just a bit more class, probably a little bit more lighter than Fenton, you know. So it will be a fair tussle out there, but I think Pillar is right. I think if Kildare let Dublin have the short kickouts and work the ball down to the 45 like Westmeath did, sure, you're inviting the best team in the country onto you without even a tackle. Gone 50 yards.
Yeah,
I mean, what are you going to do there?
I think the teams are moving away from that pillar, aren't they? We're seeing a lot more long kicks to midfield. We're seeing a lot more teams push up on kickouts, and we're seeing midfield battles, which we hadn't seen for so long. And it's adding to the games this year that they're an awful lot better to watch.
Yeah, look, a lot of people are negative about the mark, but I think it has added to the game.
It's been great, yeah.
I was at a club game the other night now, and again, look, keepers are going long with the kickouts, and fellas are actually getting rewarded for getting up and catching the ball. So it has certainly brought out, got rid of the short kickout to a certain degree. But again, if a team wants to play with sweepers, you cannot press the kickout. You have to make up your mind. You can't play with two sweepers and be able to contest the kickout.
No,
it's one or the other. Look, Kerry probably showed the best way of doing it in the two Dublin games, where after a definite free kick, they pushed everybody up before the free kick was even taken. So when Cluxton came out, 5 seconds gone, he's the ball down, ready to go. Kerry were rightly pushed up.
And they moved defenders up off their men.
They gambled.
Dublin are doing that now as well.
Yeah. You watched Dublin against Westmeath, it was full court press.
Yeah.
And look, that's the way Dublin backed themselves in terms of they feel that this is the way to go forward.
Yeah. Right, lads, we'll get predictions off you here. Pillar, we'll start with you there. Dublin, the odds here, the odds are Dublin are 1-14, which like is nothing at all. Kildare 9-1. Dublin are -9 in the handicap. Usually it's Dublin versus the handicap in Leinster, but like you'd give Kildare a lot bigger chance than most teams.
You would, because look, Kildare have been coming and Keane O'Neill is highly rated and you haven't worked with Mayo and Kerry and he's bringing a lot of new stuff to the Kildare boys. You know, but I still think it'll be 8 to 10 points.
8 to 10 points. Eddie? Yeah.
Normally the bookies don't get it too wrong. You know, to be fair, the handicap is -9. I think if Kildare can keep it in single figures, you know, they beat us last year, Dublin beat us last year by 18 points. I think if we can halve that deficit or even a bit closer, it'll show a huge improvement.
Is that what Kildare are looking towards? Is this just kind of are Kildare looking at a good performance? You've got good minors, under 16s, under 21s. Like, you're looking at 2 or 3 years of actually properly challenging Dublin, or is that is there a sneaking feeling that we could do it?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think in another year or two, these players are all kind of quite young in their early 20s, and they've loads to offer Kildare, and I think in another couple of years, with more experience, to definitely give Dublin a run for the money. But just not on Sunday, I don't think. I think they'd just be too powerful, Dublin.
Okay, amen.
I'm going to agree with the two lads. I've seen all the bounces outside, so I'm comfortable to say it. I just think you're going up against a Division 1 team, the All-Ireland champions, back-to-back. They have strength and depth. They have people that are fighting to get into the top 15. And then if you look at Kildare, there's players that will perform 1 week but not perform the next. And at this level, playing against a team like that, you have to have consistency. And I just don't think they have it yet, but I think Dublin by about 10 points.
Dublin by 10 points. You're all close enough to the handicap. They don't often get it wrong. Right, that's all we have time for this section. Before we go, I want to say hello to Liam Ryan, Glenn's brother. I know you're listening and watching at home. We're thinking about you after getting some bad news last week, so say hello to you. And we'll be back in 2 or 3 minutes with an absolutely vitally important Kildare versus Dublin quiz.
How are you?
We're gone off Facebook Live now, so we're just on the podcast, so we can say fuck or piss or whatever, but Willie was doing that anyway, so it doesn't really make a difference. All right, it's time for the Kildare versus Dublin quiz ahead of the game. Conan is down in the audience. We have one Dublin fan who's going to represent the Dublin team. They're going to represent him. And we have a Kildare fan, and Kildare are going to represent him. And whoever wins gets the free tickets for the match. So tell us who you've got there, Conan.
I've got Dermo here from Dublin. Justice for Dermo. He's actually called Dermot. And Paul
from
Kildare.
A very good name there.
Paul from Kildare. Round of applause for Paul. Come on.
All right. Okay.
Can I just say, just to contradict all the pro Dublin predictions, I think Kildare are going to win on Sunday. So.
You got your cheap cheer. You got what you wanted. Okay. Listen, you can affect this, Willie, right? So you can confer, right? So, captain of the Kildare team, it's not a surprise. It's Captain Fantastic. It's Mikko's Spice Boy. It's Glenn Ryan. Pretty boy, yeah, pretty boy, spice boy, it's all the same. And we're going to nominate Pillar Caffrey, the captain of the Dublin team. Not a pretty boy, Pillar Caffrey. All right, right, we're going for team one because Kildare are at home, or Kildare, team two are Dublin. So the first round is the player of the year round. So question one for team one, who won player of the year in 2006? You can confer. You keep scoring. I'm going to have to push you, lads.
We think Brian Doerr.
Brian Doerr, no. Kerry won the All-Ireland and Kieran Donaghy was player of the year. Question one to team two. Who won player of the year in 1996? Senior one, not minor one. I won that
Mead.
One.
Mead won it. Trevor Giles. Trevor Giles, we think.
Trevor Giles, that's right. Okay, 1-0 to Dublin. Question two for Team One. Who won Player of the Year in 2011?
Alan Brogan.
Yes, well done.
Keep them coming.
Who shouted that out? Paul, we'll get another person for the quiz if you're going to do that. This is a very hometown decisions here. Okay, question two to Team Two. Who won Player of the Year in 2002?
Irma won it. Kieran McGinney.
No, Stephen McDonald. So we're one all. Question three. 2002. It was Kieran McGinney. You're right. I actually changed that from 03. Steve McDonald was 03. Yeah, you're 100%. Question three for Team One. That was me wrong. Question three for Team One. Who won Player of the Year in 2015? Going to have to push you for an answer, lads.
Bernard Brogan.
Jack McCaffrey. Question three for Team Two. This is the last question of this round. Who won Player of the Year in 2014?
James O'Donoghue.
James O'Donoghue, okay. The Dublin are a lot stronger in that round. So it's 3-1, Conan, is that right?
3-1, yep.
3-1 after round one. Right, round two. What club does he play for round? Question one for Team One. What is Paul Flynn's club? Phil Gallions. Okay, well done. Question one for Team Two. What's Johnny Doyle's club?
They don't know. They don't know.
Look at the blank faces. Roundwood.
Alan Wood. It was A Wood, but the wrong Wood. Alan Wood. No. 3-2. Question two to Team One. What is Johnny Cooper's club?
Athena.
Okay. Question two to Team Two. What's Niall Buckley's club?
Sarsfields.
Very good. Yeah, you're flying through this one, lads. Question three to Team One. What's Paddy Christie's club?
Ballymun.
Ballymun, well done. Glenn's good at this. You're not even conferring there, Captain.
But that is Ballymun Kilkems.
Question three to Team Two. What's Anthony Rainbow's club? They're not great at the clubs ones, are they, the Dubs?
We'll have a guess at Moorfield.
No, Suncroft. Okay, what are we draw match?
4-4.
4-4 going into the last round.
Is that a butter product or a team?
All right. Last round, very evenly matched. Round three is name that team round. So you have 20 seconds to name as many of this All-Ireland winning team as you can, right? So you question one for Team One. 20 seconds to name as many of the All-Ireland winning Armagh team in 2002.
Kieran McGinney, Oisin McConville, the McEntee twins, Francie Bellew, Stevie McDonald, Clark, full forward. The comedian fella. Paul McGrain.
Who did you say at the end?
Paul McGrain,
right. I counted eight there, Conan. What? I counted the twins. So you got eight. Right, so eight to beat. 8 to beat, 8 to draw, 9 to win. So question 2 for Team 2. You also have 20 seconds to name as many of the Tyrone team that won the All-Ireland in 03. Go.
Peter Canavan. Muggsy.
Who?
Philip Jordan.
They're on 7. 7! All right. Let me just check. This is like a comeback from 2000, from 3-1 down. Colin, give us the final scores.
8-7.
It's Kildare win the tickets. Congratulations.
Courtesy of AIB. Here you go, Paul. Unlucky dear mo.
All right, that's all we have time for. Thanks very much for coming. Thanks to our sponsors, AIB, and thanks for all our guests. Give them a round of applause. See you again.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.